discipline remains mercifully.
Yes, and neither would you, Derek, this star nonsense.
Yes, yes.
No, it is it.
I'm sure of it.
Think you could tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain? Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil? Do you think you can tell? Everybody, welcome to Living Clean and Sober with Johnny Riggs, and for tonight, Artie.
Good morning.
Good morning, Art. How are you?
I'm good.
You look good.
I'm rested. Glad. It is like morning. I took my nap today.
You took a nap today?
I took a nap today.
Envious.
You do that every day?
No.
Because if you do, I'll call you around the time that you nap.
You'll see it's on silent when I do.
Smart man.
Well, we're missing Mr. McDonald. He is reveling in Florida, having fun. So we're coming to you from the beautiful town of Hightstown. Did you ever hear of it before you were actually here?
No.
Our guest tonight is Beth. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Thank you.
Glad to have you.
It's wonderful.
Lovely to be here.
Hightstown, New Jersey.
I think I
it is a really
that,
cute
no?
town.
Cute?
It's a really cute town. It's got a
How
great town.
How do you describe
center.
A town as cute?
It's like, I don't know, it's like kind of
cute.
old culture, old buildings, cute side streets.
Leave it to a female to say that the town's cute.
Oy. Oh.
Yeah, you didn't like that, huh? Well, the lovely Beth is with us tonight. How you been?
Oh, boy, that's a loaded question. How have I been? I've been okay, not great.
Okay.
It's been a long couple of months. And, you know, moving through, right? Just moving through to the best of my ability. Waking up, dressing up, showing up, doing the best I can.
Look good, feel good, play good.
Yeah.
Right, all right.
Doing my best.
That's true.
Right.
So we all agree that the toughest thing to do is to dial 10 digits, right?
What do you mean?
Wouldn't you agree?
I don't
explain
understand.
Our mantra to
picking
Beth
up the phone.
Oh.
And asking for help.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
I'm even bad at that.
So am I.
It's funny. I do struggle with that in most areas of my life, but I'm very lucky. I have a group of women in my life that it's not a struggle. We've been doing this a while, and I can literally, pick up the phone and tell them I'm off, and I'm okay with being off, and they're like, okay, and so, yeah, I'm very lucky. I have a pretty good network of women that I can call.
Yeah, we're very fortunate people.
Yes, we are.
It's always good to have a strong network.
That's right.
True story.
Like CBS, NBC. We're jokesters. Eh? So it's you and me tonight, Mr. Art.
It is. And
woo!
Huh? We are not alone. And in 10 seat.
City of Angels. Go to our website, cityofangelsnj.org, for all the fabulous stuff we do here. We have a lot of recovery stuff going on here.
We actually have a new recovery coach class starting Sunday.
I knew that.
Here. In downtown.
Beautiful
Heightstown.
That was good.
I want to do that. I want to become a certified recovery coach.
CRS.
Right?
Yes.
Add that to my repertoire of talents.
We just finished a CCAR recovery coach class in Williamstown, and then we have this one coming up. You know what I mean? This week starts Sunday and Saturday. It's 30 hours.
Yeah. It's like 6 to 9?
It is. Sunday is 9 to 5.
Okay.
Monday through Friday is 6 to 9.
Yeah.
And Saturday is 9 to 4.
So go on our website if you're interested.
It's not bad.
If you're interested, you can go to cityofangelsnj.org and do the Recovery Coach Academy. You can sign up right there. All the information, the classes, directions, address, everything is right there.
If you think you'd like to be a guest on the show, what do you got to do? All right.
You have to call John's personal cell number.
No, you don't. You have to dial 609-241-7103. Or you could go to coaradio.com.
Or you can send email to info@cityofangelsnj.org.
Now then you can send me an email too.
Then I could forward it to you.
I don't know. Kevin asked for my email address this weekend. I don't know.
Kevin was at the White House today.
I know. I saw that.
And actually we had we put a plea out on Facebook to have parents write letters to the White House. And he hand-delivered them today. So we actually...
Wow.
So I spent a good part of my... That's why I took a nap today. I was up late last night, you know, trying to make sure that we got those all saved and into Kevin's hands before he got on the train this morning. Then the train got delayed because of the bombing guy in Elizabeth. And they shut the whole rail system down.
It's crazy. So,
I think they caught him. Didn't they caught the guy? Yeah, they caught the guy. It was five guys.
Who was that?
I forget his name. I'm I'm sure if you Google it, it'll pop right up.
Did I miss something?
They was it on the Belt Parkway?
You didn't miss the Saturday.
Yeah. I know
there was supposed to be like the Ironman run, the 5K military run, and that had explosions go off in the route before it even started.
Where was that one?
That was in Seaside.
Right, and then Chelsea.
Saturday, right, and then
I heard
Chelsea
about the New York.
Saturday night was the bomb there.
In Chelsea.
And that was the same guy.
Yep.
And then there was another one this morning, right, that went off in Linden or...
I thought it was Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
It was Elizabeth.
One of the train stations there.
Yeah, and so
they
the whole...
caught him in Linden. So, yeah, that was
yeah.
a hot
so there, I heard that there was five guys. So I said to my husband, came in, and he goes, so there were five guys. You know, what were they... I said, what were they doing? He said, eating burgers.
See, I only saw I didn't see anything about the five guys. I only saw the one
just
guy.
Just the one guy?
You know what I mean? If they did, they stopped talking about those guys. until
yeah, I didn't hear anything.
Not a group
I
you want to run
Good
with.
Morning America today. I was home for that. And then I immediately rushed out of the house a quarter.
So it's just
morning.
An insane world.
It is. It's an insane world, and it's kind of all just happening
sad.
Around us.
And, you know, we have our own deal going on here with, we struggle enough with.
We do, and I know that was part of Kevin going to Washington today. I mean, it's luckily that we have their ear, you know, and we can talk to them about different things, and they reach out to all the smaller groups.
Yeah, I, what was I going to say? I forgot. It's late.
See what happens when you get old?
Yeah, please. Washington, D.C., you go?
Actually, Washington, D.C. is... was yesterday.
Yep, this weekend.
It's not in October. It was yesterday.
Yep.
And there actually wasn't any concert
Fed Up
or anything.
Rally?
The Fed Up rally was yesterday.
They were there this Saturday too, right?
Yeah, I think it was. It was this weekend.
This week, this whole weekend.
Last
there.
Year, it
well,
was.
What's Fed October 1st? Or something going on in
well,
D.C.
Well, October 6th is like overdose awareness. You know what I mean? Like we
Maybe
have knockers to put on doors and things. You know what I mean? Like
right.
that. That's like a special awareness day. But there wasn't, like last year they had Steven Tyler. That was actually two separate organizations. The Fed Up rally was Saturday. I can't even remember what the other one was, but that was the one that had the concert.
Because Sunday was, that's when I met Cheryl Crow. Talked for a while.
That's right.
She was doing her sound check. Awesome.
That's awesome.
But that was the whole, they didn't do none of that this year. And I thought it was in October, too, but it was actually like this.
Well, what is
year.
October?
And
why am
week,
I getting a room in D.C.?
You can probably cancel that room.
Maybe I should.
Go see the World War II.
I don't know. Have I been that far out of touch? I mean, I'm in
you
the know, mix.
You were on vacation for a while. You might still be in vacation mode.
Maybe I'm still in Florida.
Mentally, you're still in Florida.
We'll have to look into that. So Ken is playing golf at Doral tomorrow. Good for him.
I will be at a drug awareness thing at Mercer County Community College tomorrow.
What time?
10 to 2.
Really?
I believe it's in their student center. I believe it is their drug awareness
Burlington County,
there.
You said?
Mercer County.
Mercer
County. Mercer County.
Maybe I'll poke over there. You have to have an invite?
No, you can come.
I know you're a special guy. You know?
I'm not that special.
It's that time of year, isn't it?
Almost.
Hey, you remember when... just going back memories on the show. You remember when the Christmas show we had, the kid was leaving for Tennessee. He was in the office with his bags, and we had him on the show. People were calling
Did
in.
We ever
we're,
do a
asking, we're asking where Santa Claus was. I said,
he Where is he today?
The kids didn't like that. What are you going to tell? Wasn't he? He was. All right, so. All right. Regardless. I'm like going overload right now. Anyway. Back to you, Beth.
Back to me. Now back to
How
Beth.
Did you find yourself getting sober when you did?
How did I find myself getting sober?
What happened?
I was drinking every day. I was getting high every day, almost every day. And my boyfriend got busted for dealing drugs in school.
Wow.
And they put me in an aftercare. They called
in school, just dealing drugs.
In school,
which makes it like 100 times worse.
Well, I don't think there were drug-free school zones.
Oh,
I don't know how old those are. I don't think there was any drug-free school zones.
Oh, that's
not that that listen.
Thing,
not that that would have stopped them, right? That would have stopped us.
There are now.
Yeah, yeah, now it's
You don't really go. Oh, look, I'm within 20.
Yeah, so I got pulled into an aftercare as a potential alcoholic. And
potential
alcoholic. Is, you know, they brought me to the student center and they asked me about my drinking. And I was like, you know, they're like, well, did you drink? I'm like, yes. Yes, I do. And they're like, well, how much do you drink? I'm like, some. I was a woman of many, many words back then. And,
sounds like.
Yeah. So so they put me in this aftercare and I was in the... I was in the depths. I didn't know what reality was anymore. So I was supposed to show up like, I don't know, Tuesdays and Thursdays or Mondays, who knows, right? So I couldn't get the days right. So I'd show up on the wrong day. I wouldn't show up at all. And then I just stopped going. And I don't really know what happened. I really don't. But I came home from school one day. I was a junior in high school or a sophomore. I don't know. And my mom had packed my bags. And wow. I heard her on the phone with, I don't know who, and they were just coordinating times, and I saw my suitcase. It wasn't my suitcase, but I saw a suitcase, and and being me, I assumed that was for me. That was mine.
It had my stuff in it.
Yeah, it had my stuff in it. And the next day, I woke up in lockdown, adolescent, inpatient unit, and... you know, my dad was a rough guy, and you didn't ever question him. And he came to the rehab for the family group, and it was the first time he ever told me he loved me. And it was a really like weird, kind of almost warm and fuzzy kind of moment, but nice. Not really, because I wasn't, you know, I was just a three-dimensional empty shell of a person. And they talked about putting me on medication. Because it was, I was there under the guise of depression and alcohol abuse. So they talked about putting me on pretty heavy medication. And my father was like, if I took her here, I remember him saying this. He goes, I brought her here to take her off of drugs. If you put her on drugs, I'll break both of your legs. And nice. I thank God for that, because the facility was closed down about 5-6 years later for over-medicating adolescents.
Wow.
So I made it out. I drank like 3 days after. And then my grand plan was to drink and die. And I had, my parents were now alerted to the situation. My school was alerted to the situation. I got kicked out of one high school. I had to go to another high school. I was about to get kicked out of that high school. So I decided to go to New Mexico where my grandparents lived and drink the way I wanted to drink down there. And
how did that work out for you?
Yeah. So apparently, I don't remember doing this, but apparently I moved a girl into my house in New Jersey because her father was a heroin addict, and I thought that my house was a better environment for her to be in. I was very wrong. And my parents were getting divorced, and it was very nasty, and my dad had taps on the phones.
Wow.
So I called the girl that was living at my house. I was telling her all the stuff I was doing, and my dad heard it all on the tap, and he called me, threatened to kill me, and I promised him I'd go to AA, and got off the phone, wiped the tears away, put some more makeup on, and went and got drunk. But something happened to me while I was there, and it's inexplainable. It's God, right? Now I know it to be God. But we got stuck up on a mountain overnight. And I had been to meetings. I'd been to, of course, when I came back from rehab, it went from being in an aftercare as a potential alcoholic to being in IOP 4 days a week, which I couldn't maintain either. So I knew what the program was and meetings and all that stuff. And it hit me just overnight that I needed to go home and I needed to go to a meeting. I needed to not drink anymore. and came down off the mountain. I asked my mom for a plane ticket home, and she agreed, which was huge. And I came home. I detoxed for 3 days at home, and then I went to a meeting. And I shook for like a year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. That was a good time. It was a good time.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Where do I sign?
It's funny, too, because when I first came back to the rooms and I started going back to meetings, there was a sense of comfort that I had just being at the clubhouse that I had up in where I got sober. I would just go. I went to 14 meetings a week. I was at the diner every night until 2, 3 a.m. I didn't really go to school all that often, as pointed out to me at the end of the year when I did not graduate because of my attendance at school. But I stayed sober the whole time. It was a pretty crazy couple of years, the first couple of years I was in the rooms, because I didn't do the steps. I just didn't drink and drug, and I just went to meetings. It's funny, you know, looking back, I think that's all I could handle at that time. You know, my sponsor at the time told me to read a certain passage out of the book every single night, and I could read the words, but I couldn't comprehend what they meant. I was 18 and crazy, but I did it, and I went to 14 meetings a week and hung out with the winners. And,
well, under the auspice that eventually you're going to get it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, where I got sober, nobody was working the steps. Everybody was just, don't drink, go to meetings, and don't, you know, just keep coming back, and we'll love you till you can love yourself. And, you know, years down the road now, I understand that to be incredibly irresponsible and dangerous. And especially that whole "we'll love you until you can love yourself" thing. I didn't know what love was. I couldn't handle somebody loving me. You know, I was so shut down and so shut off that if you showed any emotion towards me, I would shut down and run.
Yeah, I was kind of that way myself, but
I'd imagine most people are going to be that way.
I would think.
You know, I mean, when you're fresh into the rooms, I mean, you're still trying to take it all in and figure it out. You don't even know who you are at that particular moment in time.
All I knew for the longest time that if even after I was clean, because I came in 86 and then, you know, in and out for a couple of years, because I believed that everything that you people told me, that was for you, not for me. So, you know, when you don't surrender, you don't get what you get when you surrender.
Yep.
Simple.
Yeah.
And back then, everybody was saying, all right, just don't use and go to a meeting.
Yeah.
And that was fine, but for somebody like me, it doesn't work. And I thought, you know, I stayed clean for a year without wanting to stay clean. I wanted to use every day, and I didn't. Like you, I didn't work or I didn't do anything else. I made 3 meetings a day.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to a town called Williamsport, which was 180 miles. I'm from Philly, so it's...
It's far for you.
Yeah. They actually had lawns and shit.
We lawns. Had hey, this is green stuff growing in the front yard. What is it?
And, you know, the thing was, I remember, like, it was probably my last shot. I remember thinking that and thought, all right, I better do this, because I was only 28. And I had a 4-year-old little girl, and my wife was out there somewhere running and using. So I, you know, I had nothing else left to do but to get clean.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned school. I was strung out on heroin in high school, that young.
Yeah.
You
know,
could care less about, went through the motions of school.
That was me, yeah. Just went through the motions.
See, it was almost a bad example because I could get a 3.8, 3.9 without even trying.
Yeah, I could not.
I was good. I mean, you know, I was pretty intelligent.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe. Who knows? But I that was evidence that, okay, nothing's wrong.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that was one of the things that...
But addiction isn't an intelligent thing. I mean, no. You're still intelligent. Well, you know, you're smart and all that. You're just becoming resourceful for the wrong reasons.
Well, right. This is where I'm putting my energy into. Yeah,
my point of saying that is that I could do all this stuff without doing the work. I could get the fruits of the labor without doing the work because I could take a test that I didn't have to study for and pass it. And I was the kind of guy that if I passed, I didn't care what the mark was.
Yeah, you sound like my husband. He was like, he's Mensa smart. He's like crazy wicked smart, and he could drink right through, you know what I mean?
Functional.
But then at the end, he wasn't, you know what I mean? He wasn't showing up for classes. He went to four colleges and kept getting kicked out.
Well, I went to Temple.
Huh?
I went to Temple in 78 after I graduated.
Yep.
And I just couldn't hold it all together. My marks were good.
Right.
But I never went to class.
Yeah, see, that was... I couldn't...
I had the books. I could read them.
Yeah, I couldn't read the books.
I could cram. I could get, you know, past the test and all that. But I just couldn't show up.
You can't handle the truth! Okay.
So I quit. I went to Temple in 78.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was right down there where I could cop. So I would find myself waiting. And you know how that ordeal can be.
Yep.
Or not going, not even bothering, and just saying, you know, hanging here.
Yeah.
You know, and my family would say, where you been since Monday? Like, I'd be in North Philly.
It's Monday.
It'd be Friday.
Yeah.
No, but as your family, believe that. I mean, my daughter told me all kinds of stories, and I was like, oh, you know, it wasn't unreasonable.
No.
I mean, it became after a while.
Well,
you start to catch on, right? You're like, this is happening too often.
In the beginning, it's innocent. So when you're telling your family something, they're like, yeah, okay, because there's no reason to not believe you.
Right.
You know? I mean,
yeah, well, you know, I tell them, hey, I got a, you know, friends of mine live in a frat house down there. I hang out with them. We study. There's no need for me to go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I stay. I was out all hours of the night using. Ripping and running, you know. But I could always hold it together for a period of time. That was my problem.
Yeah, I could not.
That wasn't anything good. That was my problem.
I was lucky. I couldn't. I didn't know that you were supposed to pass the test. I didn't know that you were supposed to, like, cram. Like, if you put me... I remember being in eighth grade and staying up all night. I don't know what I was putting up my nose, but it was keeping me awake. And... cramming for my finals in eighth grade because I was, you know, if you don't pass these, you're not gonna graduate. And I, you know what I mean? But I think that was the only time that I was awake enough to actually take some action towards my life. You know, if it didn't have anything to do with alcohol or drugs, I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I think I was motivated to go to high school because I heard that they had more stuff there to use.
You
know what I mean? Like,
there,
that was always my motivation.
Because I had all other things going on. Like, people owed me money, so I would go to school to collect.
Nice. I think I was one of those people that owed you money.
You know, when you get into the school, then you choose your group that you hang with. You know, there was the goody-goodies who, you know what I mean? Went to the classes and joined the clubs, and you know what I mean? And that type of a thing. And then there was... ones that hung out in the parking lot.
Oh, the parking lot. Yeah, that was me. I was hanging out in the parking lot. I still have a hard time joining the clubs. I still have a hard time being a part of.
Well, I picked up two or three guys each day for class in high school. Had a Cadillac. Had lots of money.
Wow.
But it's who you surround yourself with. You know what I mean? Whether it's the goody-goodies or you're hanging out in the parking lot. You know, you choose that path.
Yep.
A lot of us chose the parking lot. I mean, I'm not unguilty of that.
I like the parking lot.
I love
Sometimes
the parking lot.
Sometimes I made it to the parking lot.
In fact, my first teacher, you know what I mean, in like ninth grade in high school was like, you guys smell really good.
Well, I liked school when they had like big thing. I went to Newman, and it was a Newman Southern game every Thanksgiving. So that was big. Like, for some reason, I just loved that. when I would go to school that on a Wednesday. And man, I'd get home at midnight not remembering half of what I did that day.
Yeah.
But just managing to saunter my way home, you know. But, I mean, that was my life. I mean, we hung out with guys on the football team because we grew up together, most of us. And some of their dads were dads like mine who, you know, he was a big guy. He had 9 fingers. And I was so afraid of him.
Yep.
Because that's the kind of guy he was. He was, you know, you couldn't get in. Like, you know, he was like that, so.
But that was that generation.
But I didn't even try to because I was always in fear of that.
I mean, because the generation before them was tough. You know what I mean? They were tough.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't get sick. You didn't, you know.
You just go.
You didn't even go to school. You worked and contributed to the family.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I always felt that way about my dad for years. And after I made amends to him, it took him about 2 years after the actual official formal amends. And he started to drop his guard. And I'm so grateful for that because before he passed away in 2005, for a couple of years before he passed away, like, that was gone. Like, he was able, like, he accepted my amends.
And that's because we mellow as we get older.
Yeah, I think also, too, right? I think also, too, a big part of it was that he wasn't worried about me abusing him the way that I did for my whole life. I think
Well, it's funny you said that because that's how it was with my dad. I had about 6.5 years clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived at the shore. My mom and dad lived around the corner from me. They had a house there. I had a house up the street. And I kept talking about my relationship with my dad. And my dad had never said that he loved me. Never. So, there was this time, I was spending a lot of time with my sponsor, and I kept bringing it up.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, you wrote about that, so maybe you might want to. It was an amend thing, but it was also stuff that I was never able to tell him because I was afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, all right, well, I'll never have to deal with that. You know what I mean? And I was petrified walking into that house. And I watched my mother leave because I was only around the corner. So I made sure we were going to be alone. And I went in, and he was by himself. And he, at this point in time, it was probably 6-8 months before he passed. He was sick. He was a diabetic, and his kidneys had shut down, so he was on dialysis. He was really sick. So maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know. But I walked in, and I said, can I talk to you? And he said, sure. What's up? I said, I told him how he made me feel. Like, I had 3 brothers, so. Mm-hmm. He always made me feel different than them. And I felt like I was never accepted. And I was looking for his approval my whole life.
Mm.
And up to that point, never got it.
Mm-hmm.
So I prayed hard, and I went in there. And I believed that if I didn't do that, you know, eventually I would have got high. So I did.
Right.
So I did it, and this big tough guy starts to cry.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I never knew that I made you feel that way all your life. So all them years.
Melted. Gone.
Anyway, see, we do mellow as we get older. I mean, you know, I'm going to be 60 this year. I'm way different than I was when
you
I was 30.
You got a few on me, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, but that, you know, it didn't have the impact that it did. That was in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And he passed that November, right after Thanksgiving. And we were able to close that relationship in a very loving way because he was in the ICU at Hahnemann Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see him, and I was taking a new guy. I had to speak out in Delco that night. So I said, I called him, and I said, listen, I told the nurse, put my dad on the phone. I got to talk to him. So we get there, and I got this new guy, but we grew up together. My dad knew this kid, and he was brand new. So I went in there and I said, listen, Stevie and I are going to this meeting. I wanted to stop and see you, see how you were doing, blah, blah, blah. And and it tears me up now. He says, I'm so proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh. And then before I walked out, he said, and I love you. Now, I got three brothers, like I said, but none of them ever had that chance because they were all getting high.
Yeah.
I was the only one that was clean.
Yep.
And that was, like I said, in the summer, shortly after I had told him about all that stuff, and he died in November, and we were able to close that relationship that was so sick for so many years.
Yeah, I think that's the beautiful thing about amends, is that, you know, it's unfortunate. I've been sponsoring women for years, and it's the girls that balk on nine that wind up either completely shutting down and becoming dry and just kind of white-knuckling their whole life in recovery. And then there's the women who actually do their direct amends, and this entire new pathway just opens up to them. You know, my relationship with my dad is, I am so grateful for it. I mean, as a child, the police were at the house. He was brought up on charges by the state. We were at, you know, Newton Mental Health. Like, it was not a pretty scene. My dad did not deal well with children. But, you know, after I got sober, after he started to drop his guard, you know, randomly, one day we were in his living room, and, you know, after the amends, my sponsor always told me, she's like, you're not allowed to say no to your parents anymore. And so he would drag us up to his house, which was like an hour and a half away from my house, for Sunday dinner, you know, nice. Wow. Sicilian Sunday dinner. And we were all kind of just hanging out, and I was getting ready to go, and he just stopped me in the middle of the living room, and he goes, have I ever told you how proud I am of you? And everybody in the room, just like their jaws dropped. Mm. Like, it was crazy. And then another time, my husband and I'm not quite sure if we were engaged or if we were just married, but we went up there just to visit with him, just the three of us, and I ate a can of black olives and got food poisoning. So I've not eaten those ever again. So Dan left and I stayed over, and my dad took care of me. My dad, like, it was the weirdest, like, most wonderful kind of experience of my life, because it was one of the first times that it was just me and my dad, and there was none of that tension. There was none of that, like,
it was the relationship you always wanted.
It was like, all of a sudden I'm like in my late 20s and I'm daddy's little girl and I'm sick and I'm on the couch, and, you know, he walks into the living room and he says to me, he goes, was I really that hard on you guys when you were growing up? Like, he had no idea. You know what I mean? Like, and I never brought it up with him. Like, you know, in my amends, I don't bring up anything that person did. I only talk about my part. And,
well, but that's because we parent the way we were parented. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not always that way, but that's what we know. There's not a book that comes, you know. you do what you know.
Well, I didn't agree with a lot of stuff, and one of them was the mixed messages I got. Like, my mom would say, we love you, but then I'd get hit.
Oh, yeah, getting hit was just like,
it's called
you
tough
know.
Love.
That was tough, though.
I think it's called,
you know,
corporal punishment.
Spoon, you know?
The wooden spoon.
Yeah, I had a lot of wooden spoons.
Oh, yeah, wooden spoons broken over your head, right?
Yeah,
right at the dinner table.
I'd laugh, huh?
Yeah, well, the thing was, I never had a relationship with my dad, and if I wanted one, he owned the bar. So he was always there.
He was always there.
So I would have to go to his world.
Right.
Famous last words, you wait till your father gets home.
Oh, my God. Those were like the...
And I would literally...
My mom would say that, and I would literally clean my room, I don't know why, and sit on the edge of my bed and wait.
Yeah, and I would go...
Because Dad was coming. That was not going to be fun.
I'd go behind the wall. And my mom would say that, and I'd go...
That was my brother's. Yeah, that was my brother's reaction.
My hope was that he would forget, or she would forget.
She'd forget by time.
By the time he got.
Yeah,
home.
No, I think my mom wrote herself notes.
You'd be sitting there eating spaghetti. The next thing you know, it'd be like, "Ba wham!"
Oh yeah, my brother kind of had the reaction of my father, like you did. They would just go head to head, and so my father, like one time, he just threw his head through a sheetrock wall. He's like, "I will win."
Actually, that was my sister that was like that, and against my better advice, she's like fighting with him. She'd come out of her room. crack the hell out of her, drag her around.
Right.
I'd be like, why do you keep coming out of that room? Like,
yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, one time in my life, I said to my father, who do you think you are? Come on. Now, my father was a boxer. He was tough.
I would not say that to my father.
You know what he did? Well, I was whacked. I mean, it
was big, big whacked scene. Or not. See, you got good grades. I didn't challenge my father.
And he slapped me. And he knocked me down. And
yep.
We were in the street, in the neighborhood where I grew up. And he slapped me, and I tripped over to, there was a patio, and they had the cellar window, the basement window right there. And my head broke the window, and my head split open.
Oh, my God.
And I walked away. I didn't talk to him for about a month. My mom, I had no shirt on, right? Big beard, bare feet. I was just, My mother was smacking me on my back. It was crazy. But,
yeah.
I mean, it was all influenced by drugs and alcohol.
But
what, yeah, again, like the recovery side of it, the healing that takes place from that, but not only that, the gift that I had gotten from just that action.
Yep.
It was like incredible. What it did for me was gave me more faith in God, because I had prayed hard because I was so afraid. And I asked him to remove the fear.
Yep.
So I was able to do that. And I was able to do it. And, you know, the spiritual principles that we talk about change our lives. And when people are out there using and they keep doing it and they die, they don't realize that there's hope. I mean, we try to convey that, and this is what we try to do with our kids today.
Mm-hmm.
But this thing, man, it's killing too many people.
But that was my letter to the White House. I did write a letter since Kevin was hand-delivering. I'm going, this is my opportunity.
This is your opportunity. Take it.
And that's what I said is, you know, as a parent, I talked about my nephew. I talked about my daughter. And what do we do? How do we stop this? You know, I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. We need to stop bickering about it and find a solution. Let's fund it. You know what I mean? The solution's there. It needs money.
We can do all we can. I'll tell you, I was in the ICU.
We don't have enough beds. You know what I mean? I wrote, how do you have somebody who walks in off the street and wants recovery, and we're like, yeah, 3 weeks, we can get you in somewhere.
It's disheartening. It's disheartening that we don't have that kind of funding. We need more funding. I mean, there are places I know of that have waiting lists through the end of October.
And what do you
if
do?
I was having a heart
attack.
What do
attack, you do? I you know.
But if I was having a heart attack and I went to the emergency room, they're not telling me to come back in 3 weeks.
Hey, we'll make you an appointment to come back.
I'm getting the best of the care that I can possibly get immediately.
Yep.
You know what I mean? For my own well-being, whether I want it or not.
Yeah.
Right.
You're being saved.
Then you have the other side of it.
But we don't have
where
that.
You want people to get treatment, and they don't.
But
well, I can tell you, I know just in the last month, you know, I get people all set up, ready to go. You want to go to treatment? Let's get you going. You know, working with this wonderful woman in Staten Island, trying to get these kids in. And mom, you know, everything's set up, ready to go. And mom says, I have to go find them. I can't find them. And 3 days go by, and I'm calling like two times a day, and I'm trying not to bombard them, but she can't find him now all of a sudden, and he's gone. He's off the radar.
Well, because they don't want to be sick. I mean, you can't tell somebody you're going to get help in 3 weeks. I mean, you know, what we do at City of Angels now, we're going to take you to our doc, and we're going to, you know, at least get you using Suboxone so you're not sick, and you know what I mean? But it's the sickness thing. They're just not going to sit around for 3 weeks.
It's difficult.
They'll be detoxed in 5 days.
Yep, and in pain, and in a ton of pain.
The first thing to that is, here, automatically, like, whenever I went to a detox, I had a really crummy habit, like 30 bags a day, and I knew that I was going to detox, I was already sick.
Yep.
Before the symptoms,
just
you know?
The mental.
Well, that's the head thing, you know? But, you know, I just don't know, like, okay, what do you do for this? What do you do for that? And you try to have some answers, but sometimes you don't. And when we don't have answers of a way to help someone or to be there for them, they die. It's not like you can say, all right, Beth, let me get with you next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And talk then.
They're gone.
Because people say to me, all right, I'll go Monday. Well, today's Monday. You mean next Monday?
Right.
No, the time to go is now.
Right.
Well, the dog's got to get groomed. And come on.
Is it? And then
I tell them. I talked to a girl, a young girl, in and out of treatment, right? Reaches out to me, wants help. I said, okay, let's see what we can do. So I'm trying to help her, and now she's putting the foot on the brake, right? So I says, let me tell you something. This is what's going to happen. You live with your dad, right? Yeah. And he's really upset with me. I said, don't you think he'd be more upset if he got up tomorrow morning and found you dead? Wouldn't he be a little bit more upset? Oh, that's you're really dramatic. Dramatic? I've seen this 1,000 times over.
But that's the invincibility of being young. You don't think in terms of, I'm here today, I'm not tomorrow. You know, I'm older. I think about that every day.
I think about that every day.
Because we're old.
I'm grateful when I wake up every day. You know,
right?
But,
hey, I'm still here.
But when you're 20 years old, you have...
You know. You also have to take into consideration that when you're dealing with addiction, you're dealing with somebody that's beyond human aid. They're no longer in a place where they can make choices.
They're rational. They're rationalizing in their own mind to justify their actions.
It's a delusion. Everything is a delusion, and everything that they do, right? So all the actions that we take as human beings creates the reality that we live in. And people, when they're in active addiction, first of all, they're totally beyond human aid. They live in a complete delusion to make what's unacceptable acceptable in their lives. They get a moment of grace. They want to get sober. They've got that moment of grace.
It's a small window.
And, you know, you've got to grab them as soon as possible, because the delusion is much stronger than grace at first.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's why we go through the steps. That's why we go through the work. That's why we do a fearless moral inventory, is because we have to look at how we're living our lives based on an old idea or a delusional lie, like completely delusional. It starts to clear away that wreckage, right? We go and we make direct amends so that we can walk around knowing that we're participating in our lives. The only way to build self-esteem is to do esteemable acts. And I really believe that for a lot of the women that I've worked with and for myself, going and actually making direct amends to the people that I've harmed through my entire life, and including when I was sober and not working the steps, started to build self-esteem, which brought me more into the light, which made it more palatable to see the truth.
And build your self-confidence. I mean, just everything. I don't see how it hurts you in any way, you know, to do that.
And that's why, you know, in long-term recovery, it's necessary to do the 11-step inventory every night, and to take look at the 24 hours ahead every single morning, because I have a disease that tells me that the delusional lie is always going to be a better option. So if I don't maintain a certain level of discipline every single day in meditation, prayer, and inventory, I slip into that delusional lie like that. Like, it's just,
you know,
it's
I think,
over.
Though, amends is a huge part, because, you know, as a parent on the other end, you know, we haven't gotten to that part yet. You know what I mean? Where she's grateful for, you know, where she's at today.
Right.
You know, but I think you need to do that. You need to recognize it. You need to find it in your life, and it heals a lot of things. You know, relationships and trust get broken, and it takes a long time for that to heal and come back. And
yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a great way to really finalize that process. And
sure. Well, yeah.
Absolutely. And move on, right? Because every time you walked into the room with your dad, that uncomfortability, that wall of misunderstanding was there until it wasn't, right? It required...
7 years long.
Yeah.
Clean.
Right. In the rooms, doing the right thing. You don't actually go and have a conversation. And I think one of the problems for alcoholics and addicts is that we would rather have a monologue than a conversation. So we start to play out the end before we're even willing to walk in the front door, because God forbid we don't know what's going on. You know, my sponsor, who I've had since I had 6 years sober, which is when I finally went through the work, the first 6 years were god awful. She says constantly that recovery is all about relationships, right? Sobriety is about relationships. It's a relationship with God. It's a relationship with you, and it's a relationship with myself. And I don't know how to do any of those things when I come into these rooms. I didn't, you know, I remember calling my sponsor at 90 days sober and telling her how I physically felt and like the context of the situation. And she would tell me the feeling I was feeling. She's like, oh, Beth, that's called happiness. I'm like, get out of town. That feels good. I like happiness. I'm going to write that one down. You know what I mean?
Well, because we find that we like people telling us we're okay. We like that. We didn't get much of that when we were using.
Well, we didn't deserve that when we were using.
Well, maybe not, but we never really got it. So it's more of a... I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but it's more of an upset than anything else if someone, like, says good things about me.
Oh, my God, it's horrible.
That's the way it used to be, and I'm like...
I still have...
Maybe they're delusional.
Right, maybe they're delusional, right? So, yeah, I think at my core, I still, 25 years later, see myself as probably... I see myself through a delusional lens, and there are very, very few people that I will... If they were to give me a compliment, I would just... plainly accept. But anybody off the street were to tell me anything positive, I'd be like, you don't know the whole story.
Right.
You don't know what you're talking about. But that, right? But then again, it's that delusional lie that we tell ourselves to keep ourselves sick.
Right. And we can be around for 60 years. That piece is never fully going to go away. So there's always parts of that that are there.
Yeah.
You know, and... You know, when people are new, they come in and they go, oh, you have this amount of time and you still think that way or you still feel it. Just keep coming.
Keep coming back, right?
And that's what I used to think.
Right.
Until I got, you know, I celebrated, 20 years and I'm thinking, wow, I got a lot of work to do. Because there's levels.
Right. There's definitely levels.
You know, and that doesn't mean that, okay, since you're not this far into the step process, that means I'm any better than you.
Nope.
Just means I can help you. So sponsees.
Yep.
You know, and I was always told, when they come in and they're willing, get them then.
Get them in the book.
Get them then, because, again, that's a small window. Mm-hmm. And we can't give anybody willingness. It's the only thing we can't give them.
Yep. That's why you got to grab it, you know?
So that's what people told me. When their ass is on fire.
Grab them.
That's it. I mean, I went so far as to, I said to my sponsor, like, I didn't know what to do, what they ask them, all that. And I said, well, how about if I'm sitting at home? I was giving them these hypothetical things.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and my house is on fire. What do I do? He says, you get out of the house.
Get out of the house. Huh.
And again, he said, nothing's going to happen.
And on the stove, it's hot. What do you do?
What do you do?
Touch move it. Your hands. Right?
Well, I used to touch it. When they said, don't touch that, it'll burn you.
I think that's just the natural reaction.
You know what? We all have that rebellious mode that we get into.
Plus, right? You know, what that represents
to me.
Tell
me to sit down, I'm standing up.
Right. And I saw that as a message that, okay, of course, I get out of the house. But once I get out of the house, then what do you do? Same thing. When you're using and once you get clean, you're out of the house, that's burning.
Now what?
Now what?
Right. And the house still seems more appealing, right? Because comfortable is always going to be the easier, softer way. It's going to be more appealing than standing in the
light. Actually, comfortable is going to be the first thing you're going to gravitate to.
Always towards comfortable, right?
Of course.
Yeah, dude, I go dark, right? So, you know, I don't believe that you get sober and you just, you know, ascend to this level of, you know, pink cloudism. You know, I go through, listen, the holidays are rough for me. Every single year, the holidays are rough for me. And what do? I hit a couple of extra meetings and make sure that I'm at least minimum texting my network. Because it's not a good time for me. It's a dark time for me. And I do what I can, right?
So, you know, it's a dark time for a lot of people because it holds, you know, not good memories. I mean, everybody thinks Christmas and Thanksgiving and it's family time and you know, there was a lot of times where people didn't have that family there to support them and might still not today. I mean,
right.
You know, Kevin and I go out of our way to make sure people are, you know, not alone during the holidays.
Dude, I want to be a part of that because I was, you listen to Christmas music and you listen to all that stuff and you hear, you know, if you're gonna feel love, this is the time of year you're going to feel loved. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the right. people that love you are going to show up at this time of year. Well, guess what? Nobody really showed up at that time of year for me, and I really believed that I was unlovable. I really believe that there was something wrong with my core, right? And add alcoholism to that, which is just a self-pity party for freaking hell. You know what I mean?
It just makes it more intense.
It just makes it more intense, right? Because we do everything more intense, good and bad.
What does it say on the prescription? Alcohol may intensify.
and you know, I remember being in the military, and you're not home for the holidays, and your friends and your family, and you're there alone. So you're drinking, and you hit it right on the head. It's a heavy pity party, and the more you drink, the more intense.
Oh my God,
worse
it gets, right? So what I do every Christmas or every Hanukkah now, I converted like 3 years ago. But now I'm raising my children Jewish, and what we do for the holidays is I make it good for them, right? So it tells me in the text that I used to get sober that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. And so what I do is the best way that I can do, it's hard for me to go out into the community over the holidays. So I do the best I can, and I make my husband's Hanukkah awesome. And, you know, we do the mensch on the bench, and we even have the elf on the shelf, and, you know, my kids are, you know, they're totally into it, but that's what I do, right? Service is the best way for us to get up and out of self-pity, right? And it goes back to self-esteem. The only way to build self-esteem is by esteemable acts. Nobody can love me until I love myself. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's a miracle that when you are able to give love and be able to accept love.
That's a miracle.
Yeah, and that's where the process takes you.
Right.
Through the steps and traditions of the program, it shows us all facets of life, like groups of people. I wasn't very good in groups of people.
Yeah.
That's why I wasn't invited to many things.
Right?
Christmas represented for me an opportunity. What's in the presents?
Yep.
Where's the money? This and that. And it was always about the next one. It didn't matter. Noel, all that nonsense.
Right.
Didn't matter. And my mom was a devout Catholic. I mean, she insisted we go to church on Christmas, like Christmas Eve, that kind of thing. And I showed up there making a scene. So I couldn't do anything right.
Yeah.
Based on my lifestyle. Now, you take that away, of course, there's these sordid perversions, these character defects that we like to enjoy from time to time. But they're the things that made me feel so bad about myself that I had to use.
Right, because
there's no choice.
It doesn't matter how deep the delusional lie is. When you hurt somebody, there's no denying it. There's just no denying it. You know, and so we come into these rooms and we start to live a different lifestyle. It takes time for those things to become our reality, right? It takes time. It takes practice and prayer. Oh, my God, the amount of prayer that I would do every single year before going anywhere during the holidays, it's overwhelming, you know? But over time, you know, it's service that saved me. It's service that has taught me how to be the person I want to be instead of the person that I thought that I had to be. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And it's like, and it goes back to every choice and every decision that I make creates the reality that I live in these days. Do you know what I mean? So I've become, and I've been kind of looking over this. I celebrated in August, and it was kind of a milestone anniversary, and I just really have been overwhelmed by how did I become this person? Do you know what I mean? Like, I was homeless. My father had a restraining order against me. My mom kicked me out and took my child support. Like, I was on my own when I got sober. And now I have this like wonderful family. I live in this really cool town. I have a job that I feel like I'm doing something to better the world. I have these friends in my life that call me randomly on a Tuesday and be like, "Hey, I'm going to be in town. I'm dropping off Starbucks. It's on your front porch. I got to go." You know what I mean? Like, I didn't ever think people like that existed. And I get to do all this, and it comes from, first and foremost, is the grace of God, right? I have to give the grace of God most of the credit, because there are so many people out there that aren't getting the opportunity to be and to do the things that we've done. But again, it's going through the work. It's clearing away the wreckage of the past and starting to make decisions based on what I want to become, right? That ideal woman that I started to build in the fourth step, and taking actions to be like that person. And then one day I just kind of turn around and I am that person. It's kind of
It wasn't one day, though. No. It was decades.
It was decades.
Work, right?
Right? Decades.
Relieve me of the bondage of self that I might better do.
But the beauty is that you're still involved. And you can pass your message on of this is what recovery really looks like if you pursue it, you know?
Yeah. And it's actually funny. I work with a girl who's got 7 years. I think she's got 7 or 8 years. And she's just, it's funny. She's the first girl that I've ever met that reminds me so much of me. And she said to me, she's like, you make it look like this is possible, and you're happy, and you're free, and you enjoy your life, and it's worth working towards.
And it is, and that's what, you know, you might trip that one person to go into recovery going, hey, look, it is possible. I mean, you know, we all make that connection with somebody, you know, it's not always everybody.
Right.
But you hope that we make that one connection with that one person that we can save at some point in time.
Just, yeah, right?
You have that message.
I'm going to give you a witness. Chore right now.
Uh-oh.
Ruh-roh. We're almost done, too.
What do you think the chore is? What haven't we done yet?
The word of the week? I think we should skip it this week.
What are we skipping?
We do... all right, my co-host...
The empty chair?
He does, yeah.
The empty chair. We should put the cutout of him there when he's not here, so...
He does... We do a word for the week, which... Most times has something to do with recovery. It's just one word.
You know, we should have you pick the word of the week.
You let me pick the word?
It should be the word of the week.
What's all right.
The word
of the week? Grace.
Grace. Grace is probably a good one after this show tonight.
Yeah.
I think.
Grace. Hi. Good night, Grace.
Good night, Grace.
Good night, Gracie. I say that to my kids every night.
We're about ready to wind it down here, huh? Right?
Yeah, the hour just flies by when you're having fun, man.
I'm so lucky to be here.
All right. It's always a pleasure. We're getting close to that minute where we got to sign off. Beth.
Thank you so much for having me.
The lovely Beth, join us tonight. Beth is employed by Recovery Centers of America.
Yep. I work for Recovery Centers of America as business development. 1-800-RECOVERY, 1-800-RECOVERY.com, 1-800-RECOVERY, and 1-800-RECOVERY.
And Recovery Centers of America was one of the sponsors at our run.
Yes, we were. Ago. And it was a wonderful, wonderful day.
For that little set two show that we had last week.
That's right. That's right. Impromptu.
I did post Impromptu. That last week, too, you know.
I said set two. That's a
That's the same thing.
Isn't and it? That show is available on the website, City of Angels.
Do you have our information?
COARadio.com.
You can get it on your phone, yeah.
No, I don't. How do we do that?
Artie will take care of that after the show.
If you go to COARadio.com, you can download our app and listen anytime.
Yet another great
show. It's up on my computer at home right now. I think my kids are listening.
You know, or you can go to COARadio, COARadio.com,
yay,
and
Bandit
Living
Morgan.
Clean and Sober show, and all of the shows are there on demand that you can listen to. Actually, all the shows that we've done for all the different venues are there. So, you know, a lot of people go and listen on demand. There's subjects from relationships to us living clean and sober to solutions with Michael DeLeon. And we still have Families in Recovery that I saw at the Recovery
That's
Advocates
on your website.
Race.
That picture's up on your website.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a great place. You guys are doing a great thing. And
thanks.
I feel really lucky that I got to be a part of it tonight.
I'm glad you did. And we will have you back again.
That'd be awesome.
Like to be a part of it.
Absolutely.
I want to come when Kelly comes.
Yeah. Well, once again, you can go to our website, cityofangelsnj.org. Great stuff. You can, if you want to be a guest on the show, all you got to do is call, right, Art?
Yep, they can call or they can email info@cityofangelsnj.org. That does come to me, and I will make sure that Johnny and I sit down and get you scheduled to appear on the show.
Please join us. Give us a call, 609-241-7103, or you can email me personally at jraggio@harptreatmentcenter.com.
Woohoo!
And there you have it.
I want to thank the lovely Beth again for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having
me. Artie, great job as always. And until...
Actually, we're going to not be here next week because I'm going to Connecticut Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday.
Artie's bailing on us next
week.
For training.
Okay, so we'll see you in 2 weeks. Please join us then. I have an array of guests that will be joining us on the show. So thanks again for listening tonight. Until then, be well.
Oh, I shot the sheriff.